Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning. Thank you so much for choosing us today. Let us catch up on some of your comments before we move on to our next item. People have lost faith and faith. I've read that, haven't I? Yes. Hi, Greg. Sinn Féin have just shown their weakest hand so far by not being able to pick a candidate from within their own party. According to Council, Miguel Nasberg on Friday, who declared himself as a communist and enjoyed electoral support from Catherine Connolly, this places Sinn Féin within the communist camp. I certainly won't be voting for her or Sinn Féin in the future. Sinn failure, more like. I get where you're coming from, but the spectrums in politics and people from in the same sort of left space can back the same candidate without automatically them all being the same. Greg, I'm absolutely devastated to see the photos of the dogs locked in cages and they're all in horrendous state. How in under a God can this be happening on our doorstep in this day and age? What I would give to be in charge to deal with these people. Hope they get the highest penalty for what they have done to these poor wee innocent dogs. Thanks, Greg. That comes in from Anne-Marie over the weekend. It actually was on Friday. Excuse me. On Friday, the Gardaí seized 14 dogs. We were hoping to cover that this morning, but the ISPCA says it's an ongoing investigation and they can't just at this time. Not once has Pearce mentioned immigration, one of the top problems in this country. What rock is he under? Any presidential candidates for sending more this way won't be getting my vote. Halal food being put in schools, Irish schools and all big stores too. Sinn Féin should be standing up for the Irish. No point in the United Ireland when it's going the way it is. Well, Pearce spoke in the Dáil on immigration on Friday. So well worth keeping an ear to that. The role of president, really, you know, the more you talk to people about it, the less significant it is really in that space. But I get you. Greg, no one, no matter how fitting they may appear, will fill Michael D's shoes. That comes in from Mary. Indeed, but Michael D was well respected. He was a Labour man. You know, he had to go out and campaign and try and get over the line, and he did. So I would give, you know, whomever is coming in the opportunity maybe to do the same. Very disappointing for Sinn Féin supporters that the party couldn't agree to put a candidate forward for president as the main opposition party. No, Greg, ask him the question you put to Colm. How can they back Connolly on neutrality? Well, I did put the same question to him. Can Pearce give me at least two good reasons to vote Catherine Connolly? As of now, I cannot vote for any of the three. Why isn't Pearce speaking about the mockery of democracy by not giving a platform for other independent candidates? Pearce, your actions speak louder than your hollow words. Well, there could be independent candidates on the ballot paper yet. So feds confirmed the Kirk shooter wasn't of the left, despite what Patel, perjured FBI director, or Trump, 32-count felon, have said, and yet they continue to call violence on the left over it. It's a complex matter there. You want to keep both sides in this, Greg, or are you ready to admit only one side has a problem with violence? Only one side in the US has a problem. Only one side in the UK has a problem. Only one side here has a problem, and it's all the right. There hasn't been left-wing violence since the noughties. It's been Christian nationalists and Islam fundamentalists this entire time. Maybe we should be looking at the churches. That's more opinions on that. These are some comments coming over from Friday. Does Ireland really need a president? Considering we're being told what to do by Europe, it's not in France, like in France, where the president has a significant role. It is it's not insignificant, the role, but in terms of whether a president would tell us what to do in this country or not, they simply don't do that. But I take your point, of course. It's now 9:15 a.m. And since 9 a.m, I've called my local GP 45 times with no answer. It's saying line busy, or it answers and goes through a list of please hold. After it gives a list of its services, it then cuts off. I wouldn't like to be having a stroke this morning with this service. It's probably not a good time to ring any GP on any day just when they're opening, even after lunchtime for that matter, because we're a population of 160,000 people, 170,000 people. And a lot of them are going to be doing exactly what you're doing. You're not the only person trying to get through. And I don't think, you know, most GPs, after being closed overnight or over the weekend, all of them are going to have a bit of a rush, aren't they, on Monday. Caroline, do you want to put that person through? This election shows how undemocratic the Irish election of president is. If there is no anti-abortion candidate elected, when more than a third of Ireland oppose this legal form of murder or bodily rights, depending upon your viewpoint. Okay, I mean, I think what you're saying, not elected, but entitled to stand, I think is what you're saying there. The political parties choose who runs for this so-called non-party political role. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. A little bit of irony there. Rightio, Geraldine Doherty, Imagine Why, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Good.
Congratulations. You've €800 in your back pocket. You won the daily prize, which had rolled over a bit on Friday's bingo. Congratulations.
Great. Thanks very much.
Very good. And this was actually a gift. You didn't buy the book.
No, I didn't, no. So, well, I went out for breakfast in the morning, and then my friend was going on to buy herself a book, and she bought me one as well. Mm. And she gave me the lucky one.
How does this work now? What do you do with the winnings? Can you keep it all to yourself, or do you just buy her a box of chocolates, or what?
I might die or something.
Come here, it came as a good time too, because you've a wee trip to America coming up later in the year, so plenty of spending money for the Christmas gifts then.
Yeah, I'm going out now in November.
Oh, brilliant. Congratulations. Well, €1,800 and supporting, although it was your friend, supporting Vision Ireland as well. Well done to you.
Thanks very much.
All right, okay. You're going to play going forward now? You're going to be buying your own books going forward, Geraldine?
Oh, yeah. I'll buy her one back now too.
Good woman. Hey, congratulations. Well done to you.
All right,
bye-bye. That's Geraldine Doherty there, who won €1,800 on the... And that's not the jackpot, by the way. That's the daily prize. And the daily prize, I could do with this information, but it's 400 quid again today, isn't it now? It starts at 400 quid again today, which is the daily prize. And then if it's not won today, another 200, and on it goes. So it's not just the big jackpot that's useful. Obviously, you know, the daily prizes can be pretty good as well. €1,800. The jackpot's 9,800, but just the structure of the daily prize and the rollover, just that kind of info would be good for me to share. I know what it is, but I'm afraid of misspeaking. Well done, Geraldine, and well done to all of you playing the bingo. And by the way, just to remind you, it's not like a club or something. You can go into pretty much most retail stores around the Northwest, and you'll see the bingo books there. You can pick it up, mark it off, see how you get on. You could be winning big. 1,800 quid could be yours, the 400 quid daily prize, or whatever it might roll over to. And of course, the jackpot then over €9,000 on Thursday. And all the while, you are supporting Vision Ireland. And it's one of the biggest supporters, the Radio Bingo. It's one of the biggest supporters of Vision Ireland in continuing to do the excellent work that they do, not just across the country, but of course, specifically here in County Donegal. Here's the numbers, by the way, to see how you get on today. Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by Brian Mooney, Guidance Counsellor and Irish Times Education columnist. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Right after what it seems like months and years of conversation, we've arrived at something that comes around every quarter of a century, and that's a new primary school curriculum. So talk to me as you see the headlines of this, Brian.
Well, it was all put in place in 2023 when Minister Norma Foley issued the curriculum framework, which set out the vision for the new curriculum, the principles for the new curriculum, the key components, etc. And also, very interestingly, the time allocations for each subject area, including the patrons programs, obviously, in religious schools, which was 1 hour, 40 minutes for up to first class and 2 hours after that. So what today we have is, apart from the patrons program, we have it filled out. So we have the arts, art, drama and music. We have languages, we have English, we have Irish, and we have continental languages now for the first time. We have the social and environmental studies, which is basically history and geography. We have STEM, so we have science, technology, engineering and maths. And we have well-being, which is physical education and SPHE. And all of those are set out clearly in the new curriculum.
I mean, obviously, people are going to try and pick flaws in this. As you could not pick flaws in it, but actually sort of debate the merits of it. Mm. One of them being that, you know, increased emphasis on physical education. But then again, you have gaps from school to school, potentially, whereby they don't have the facilities for it, etc.
The same could be said for science, the same, you know, technology, etc. Ultimately, do you wait until every school in the country has resources before you roll it out? Or do you roll it out and then creates enormous pressure on the department and on local authorities and everybody, local communities, to actually get the resources up and running to actually deliver the curriculum that is there? I mean, you'll find it in at second level, you know, issues like, you know, some schools can't offer chemistry. In the past, it was higher level maths. But ultimately, the pressure of that brings it about in a sense. So I think it is right that we go ahead and we set these targets and then we try and ensure that every child has access to them.
Consent is an interesting... Now, it's not going to be specific to sexual consent, but the conversation of consent, which is perhaps no harm, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, we have to teach children, you know, the parameters of social behaviour in a sense. We, Minister was talking earlier this morning, you know, about attraction and how that, you know, what's appropriate to respond to attraction, the whole area of sexuality at an appropriate age. And as she pointed out, by virtue of the fact that we have 2 years now of the early childhood, many children are starting in to the school system at age six. And therefore, by the time they leave primary education, they've already reached puberty and they're dealing with all of these issues. So we have to deal with it in an age-appropriate way that obviously informs children and has a discussion with them about how they should deal with these issues as they grow into an awareness of feelings and emotions which are appropriate for their age.
In terms of fifth and sixth classes being taught about different sexual orientations, this isn't genders or the conversation about genders, is it? This is maybe, you know, heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality?
Exactly. Yes, it is. It's again, it's an awareness raising issue so that children are aware of these issues and that they're hearing about it and discussing it in an age appropriate way. Because with, you know, with social media now, we have cases. I get letters in the Irish Times from parents who are concerned that their children as young as nine, even though they're not giving them mobile phones, effectively are seeing it on other children's mobile phones. So as to be doing this and having a discussion in an appropriate environment with a teacher, you know, with very clear parameters is I think a very, very welcome and advance.
Religion, there is still obviously scope for that, but we scenarios have been put out there that, you know, you might have a teacher who themselves is not of the religion they're teaching or doesn't have an interest in teaching religion, and it could be to a class of children, you know, not necessarily who are Christian, but also to maybe from non-practicing families. What do you see? Do you see enough change in that space or not enough or too
much?
Well,
here's the thing. I was curious about this, Greg. Obviously, the original curriculum framework set out, and it was interesting. I was looking at it yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in Appendix 7 on the last page of the document. It's not even in the full text, but it's in an appendix stating that the patrons of schools, whether they are Church of Ireland, Catholic or whatever, to have what's called a patrons program for 1 hour, 40 minutes up to first class and 2 hours from first class to sixth class, in which they can promote their own particular program. Now, obviously, I raised with the department the very question that you have raised with me. And their response was very, very interesting. And I will read it to you. It says, religious beliefs and worldviews within social and environmental education, that's history and geography, provide all children with a broad exploration of major religions, beliefs and worldviews focused on their cultural, historical and societal dimensions. But here's the interesting bit. While religions, beliefs and worldviews within this history and geography program is distinct from a school's patron program, the two, when taught through an inclusive lens, can offer complementary learning experiences. Mm. Now, what does that mean? I think it will take some time for us to tease out what the department, are they opening a door there? Are they saying to a teacher who doesn't actually practice that they don't actually have to, or do they still have to, you know, promote it as if they are a believer themselves? what does inclusive and complementary lens mean? So I think there's a discussion which we have to have, because I think as a teacher myself, the most important thing is the authenticity you have with your children. And, you know, if a teacher is doing something on a daily basis or for 2 hours a week that they patently don't believe in, children will see through it in 10 seconds. And what are you teaching children in that way? I mean, I was always a great believer that faith formation should be a parish-based thing, because ultimately, at the end of the day, when it is delivered in that context, there's no question about authenticity. But look, we'll have to see, because I think a number of teachers have been pressing, you know, for, how would I put it, allowing them to be professional in their work without having to compromise their own values or beliefs.
What's your views on introducing a foreign language to students as well? Is that
I think it is hugely important, Greg.
Is fifth class too late, or
it could well be fifth, but I mean it's 2 years earlier than they're getting it now.
True.
And I mean, if you go on the continent, you know, I was always, you know, taken aback with the fluency of languages that you go on the continent, and I took many tours in my time as a teacher, you know, where you were seeing children, meeting children who are fluent in four languages. Mm. And they did it with the total ease. And here we struggle with two. So effectively introducing more languages to children at a younger age will in fact increase their fluency. And ultimately, from their employment perspective within the European Union, that is going to enhance them right throughout their lives.
Yeah, and also give them an opportunity to maybe almost sample what a new language might be like and have more of an interest into secondary. I remember a conversation with my middle one, and he was saying, shall I do Spanish or French? And I was like, well, which are you interested in? He says, well, I don't know, but I need to do... You know what I mean? It was a silly conversation, because, yes, like, he was... And I mean, I know you can switch, but he had no... It was anyway. Hopefully, that will allow children and their families to sort of have a clearer a sense of what you want to do heading into big school and in inverted commas. A caller says,
"It's a wonderful yeah, innovation." You know, I mean, the additional PE, the introduction of sciences, the introduction of technology, the introduction of languages. You know, it's creating a huge amount of additional stimulation for young people at that age and allowing them to identify the areas that they really have an interest in. And particularly in schools, Greg, where students are forced, I think it's a very bad policy, to actually select their optional subjects before they even enter first year.
You know,
at least having exposure to them in fifth and sixth class will give them an insight of what it actually means.
Okay. We'll watch on with interest. Thank you very much, Brian. Lovely to chat to you. Look
not
after yourself. Bye bye. Take care. That's Brian Mooney there, who is guidance counsellor and Irish Times education columnist. Again, apologies for those watching the stream. Bear with me. We are looking to resolve that issue. It's just a particular issue we're having at the moment, but majority listening out there will have heard Brian loud and clear. A caller believes home economics is a much more important subject for boys and girls, and it should be made mandatory because it teaches basic survival skills in cooking and in finance. Yeah. I can't disagree there. That person saying the shooter wasn't a leftist ideologist obviously missed the police report on him, as his mother stated clearly to them that her son became absorbed in leftist thinking. Like, someone was dead and someone's responsible for it, and it's astonishing that the political argument to give him to one side or other, or to claim him or what have you, or not claim him. He was of a MAGA family, and that's not an insult, that's the terminology that's used, but he was a non-aligned registered voter. He said himself, and in the conversations that he had, he was becoming more frustrated with conservatism. He was living with someone, had a romantic relationship with a biological male who was transitioning to female. He spent a lot of time in Discord servers chatting to people who would be of the left, so to speak. And he says that Charlie Kirk was spreading hate, and he had an opportunity to stop that. So whether that's left, right, down the middle, whatever, but those are the facts. But violence, whether it's from the left, right, middle, or wherever it's from, you know what I mean? We need to be able to converse and have a conversation without horrible insults, you know, ruining people's reputations, killing people. I mean, we need to get back to just having a, you know, social discourse. All right, we'll be back with more after the break. Okay, we are joined on the program by Jimmy Stafford, who of course is of this parish, as they say in other radio shows, but also is Letterkenny Chamber President. Jimmy, good morning to you. Thanks
morning,
so much
Greg.
For joining us. How are you keeping?
Oh, great, yeah. Monday morning, great.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Maween, you are. I see a few people not wanting to be here, but anyway, that's all. come here, 60 years, the Letterkenny Chamber. It's on its 60th year. It's a remarkable milestone, isn't it?
Yeah, unbelievable, Greg. You know, when you think last year we were planning the 60 and what we do, so I suppose we did a number of things. You know, we had a pitcher call a few months ago and we got all our members into a football pitch and we got to 60. But I suppose last Thursday night really was the big night where we invited all our members and past presidents and board members to Castle Grove House just to mark the 60 years. And I suppose, Greg, for me, it was great just to talk through, because on the night itself, there was paper cuttings there from 1965, 1970, 1980. And if you look at the headlines then versus now, there wasn't much difference. But I suppose what it was a lot of our past presidents came as well, Greg, who had served from those early days right up to recently. And just to see, I suppose, to chat to some of them men and women who had served in the presidency on a voluntary basis. And it was just, that was one of the highlights for me last Thursday night, was to see the pride in their faces as well, you know.
Looking at those old clippings, you know, what do you think the differences are, if any, and none is fine too, with what the Chamber is at now, what it's trying to achieve compared to, you know, the vision of the founders of the Chamber well over half a century ago?
Yeah, it's a good question, Greg, because when I looked at the 1970 and 1960, right, you looked at the market town that Letterkenny was, and I read up the history of it all back in the 60s and the 50s, and how it transformed then into the 70s and becoming one of the largest towns in Donegal, and then into the point of where you got into industry coming into Letterkenny. And obviously there was job losses during those decades as well, and new jobs come in, but it was interesting. One of the things I said was that at our monthly board meetings, you know, we're still discussing what was discussed in 1965, which was traffic and parking. And there was a headline on the Donegal News of that back in 65 around some parking issues around Letterkenny Main Street and stuff like that. So probably that bit is, we're still talking about a lot of that stuff that was there back in the 60s and 70s. I suppose what's changed now is, if you look at it from a town perspective, it's grown into a little mini city, really, Greg, as you know, which little mini cities bring their own issues and challenges, but also, I suppose, opportunities. And I think that's the beauty of what we talk about Donegal. And I suppose the Chamber has grown as well, Greg, that we have a lot of members now outside Letterkenny, you know, down towards the you know, Killybegs and into West Donegal and Gweedore and that sort of stuff. So look, there's been lots of change, but a lot of things have, I think the one thing about Letterkenny is the character has still stayed the same. And that's a big thing. And so the individuals who join our board and our presidents and vice presidents as well.
Yeah, and what history has shown as well is the resilience of businesses in and around Letterkenny. If you think, you know, the times that we've come through, yeah, you know, the peaks, the troughs, the deep troughs,
yeah,
and then, you know, when a lot of businesses have been able to ride that out, others obviously have fallen by the wayside, others have come into an existence, but the ever-present there is the Chamber.
Yeah, and that's the one of the things I said, what I admire about Donegal, and I said this as speaking as a Cork man, is the resilience of the people up here is incredible, you know. And you look at whether you operate a business out in Arranmore Island or in Tory or wherever, down in Downings or right across South Donegal, it's the resilience of people, Greg, to bounce back. And, you know,
we have to be resilient up here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
But I think that is a testament just to the people, Greg. You know, you look at some of the business ideas and look at the larger employers that have come here as well, and they've come for a reason. They've come because of what Donegal is. And I think even this weekend I was around driving down towards Rathmullen and Remelton and stuff, and it's great to see a lot of tourism is still around. So it's just become this destination for people as well. And, you know, so we talk sometimes about business and we talk about the bigger ones, you know, the multinationals, but also about the smaller, the one person operation or the three person operation who have taken that risk to set up home here in Donegal.
Well, the smaller mediums are often, you know, we need to realise the importance of them, and I don't mean me and you, I mean generally speaking, because they are the resilient ones often. They're the ones that, you know, stick about when, you know, tariffs come in or there's political downturns or whatever it might be. So, yeah, definitely need to keep supporting. Yeah,
they're the ones that have taken. Look, you know, Greg, it's Monday morning. You're going into your business this morning. You're a one or two person operation and you're trying to motivate yourself as well every day. And I think a lot of those employers are the ones that make up the employee numbers, if you like, that employ the vast majority of the people.
Yep, sorry, just trying to count faders here while I'm listening to you. The thing that we have is we know what the story is. You know, Letterkenny, to some extent, and the county is a victim of its own success, but it's only that because, you know, you talked about the establishment city-state. You look at what's happened in Sligo, for an example, it being bypassed and stuff like that there. And, you know, we can sound like cracked records here talking about the 10T and talking about the Bonagy link and talking about this, that and that. And I think there is a sense that, you know, we've been overlooked as a county, but also Letterkenny as the biggest population centre in terms of, you know, the infrastructural development to meet those growths, and then we're left picking up the pieces, right? So do we talk about how bad the traffic is or do we not?
Yeah.
Do we talk about how, you know, there's this problem or do we not? Because, you know, you want to keep a positive spin on it, right? Yeah. But the reason it's the victim of its own success at times is because really the planning hasn't followed the growth or led the growth.
I think that's, Greg, you know, we're constantly, and I think do we talk about it or not? Yes, we do. And I think that's a really important thing because we do continue, like we have our bi-monthly meetings with the council. We continue to raise those issues. Myself and Tony and Caroline Sweeney, we're in Dublin on Wednesday for the pre-budget submission with Chambers Ireland. And we put that all in. And people listening to me say, oh, you're saying it again and again and again. But that's what you've got to do. You've got to keep saying it, Greg. And it's like antisocial behaviour in any part. You keep discussions ongoing with the Gardaí. You keep highlighting what the concerns of our members are, what the concerns of the community are. I think you have to keep at that. And I know sometimes you can sound like a broken record or a stuck record, but just keep engaging with the... And that's frustrating at times. It's frustrating for the Chamber, it's frustrating for others, but I think you just got to keep banging on that door. And that's what other counties do as well. And myself and Joe were talking outside about another county, won't name it, but that's keep knocking on that door and keep shouting about it and highlighting what a great place this is and what a great opportunity.
Shop LK has been massive.
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the key highlights for the Chamber. When you look at the people who had the foresight to bring that back in many years ago, and originally it was a paper scheme and then developed into the card scheme, and now you can buy it online. In 2024, Greg, you know, over 7 million worth of card sales alone. And if you think of a card sale, I always look at this, say you've got a 20 euro gift card and you go into a shop anywhere and you spend that. Research has shown that most people will add some money to that card. Some research has shown that people might add 3 euro extra. So a 20 euro might turn into a 80 euro spend in the shop.
Of course, yeah.
And that gift card scheme has been copied throughout Ireland as well. And if you look at this year alone, I think you've the figures there, but I mean the amount of cards that we've sold this year, 26,000.
In the last financial year, 2024, Shop LK gift card sales reached 7.2 million, generating an estimated 20 million in local spending. And it keeps the money in the area as well. Is it because of sort of gifting and tax benefits as well? Has that helped? As well, of course, it being some of us aren't great at buying gifts, right? So obviously that's a benefit as well. But is it because, you know, you can gift up a certain amount and businesses are able to give bonuses through the cards
and tax
stuff
exemption
like that?
Has been a huge plus for it. There's no doubt that's up to 1,500. So a lot of businesses would use that. But, and again, aligned with that, and it's the 20 euro or the 30 or for the birthday present or the, you know, as you said, it's an easy way out. But again, you're all looking over 200 odd plus businesses and growing who are involved in the Shop LK scheme. So your variety, your choice is huge as well that you can spend it. And look, again, Greg, we would see the spend on the vouchers. Like, some people get a voucher and they let it down somewhere. We can see the vouchers are being used and being spent. I mean, there was 134,000 in-store transactions year to date in 2025. That just shows you
the
amount of interaction. Yeah, it's great. Look, and I suppose the way I look at it as well, Greg, people are working in shops in Letterkenny who are living outside of Letterkenny, who are coming in, travelling in every morning. So it's providing that employment as well, which is really, really strong. So well done to all the founders.
You referenced the growing membership. Has the conversation been had or might it need to be had into the future about the rebranding of it? You knew what was coming. I can see the smile on your face, right? But, I mean, obviously then you've got business representative groups in different parts of the county that are doing really, really well. Do you need to look at the branding of Letterkenny Chamber?
Well, I wouldn't say the branding. I think the discussion.
I mean, literally the words. Sorry, when I'm talking about the branding.
Yeah, I think Letterkenny will always stay there anyway. Is the first thing I'd say. But there certainly is a discussion. It has started.
Letterkenny and County Chamber
could be something like that. Yeah, we'll probably have a workshop to discuss that. But it's there is a look at a board level. There's been discussions, and we will be having more about that into 2026 as well. Because as I said to you, we have members now further afield, and a lot of them, when we ask the question, why are they joining the chamber? One of the reasons they say is from a lobbying perspective. It's one voice that we are now able to talk.
And it's a powerful lobby, in fairness. You know, when you have your breakfasts and what have you, you know.
And that we can go and represent not just Letterkenny. I think that's the really important thing that I always say. We're representing the people of Donegal and the infrastructural challenges we have and the opportunities we have as well. So that's one of the things. So to answer your question, yes, the discussion has started. I think it's going to be a detailed discussion. It would need a lot of people involved in it, but I think there's a great opportunity there as well from a Donegal perspective, if that makes sense. So
In the space of lobbying, like, you know, I mean, obviously, a programme like this, and we don't get to platform with all, a lot of frustration about moving around Letterkenny, getting into Letterkenny, issues of, and in fairness, you have spoken about this, some people in certain parts at certain times not feeling safe in Letterkenny. Is it difficult for the Chamber to find its voice in that space? Because obviously, you have to recognise issues where they exist, but at the same time, you know, you start addressing them. You could find yourself actually keeping people out of Letterkenny at the same time, right? So when you're representing businesses, is it tough to sort of, you know, address the issues but not try and sort of make the fallout from them worse, i.e. less footfall, less road traffic?
Yeah, it can be, Greg, at times. You know, I know that from having discussions with friends of mine outside Letterkenny, and who would say, and you try and talk them through, look, there are times when it is not as busy as other times. And I think the example we used, and I think Leonard Watson would be a great man on this, is the rally weekend. We're always saying, no, we saw the evidence this year that from about 9:30 to 4:00, it's like, I remember going into Letterkenny, I think you did as well, I think you had a post up that you flew through it. Yeah. So, but after four, then
I got some hassle about that, though.
I know that. Yeah.
That's the last positive post I'm putting up.
But you wouldn't believe the amount of, we were all delighted when we saw your post going up. So this is a real positive post. But yeah, and it's a difficult discussion. There are ongoing things happening around the Tommy Keys roundabout and Ballyrain. Will that be roundabouts taken out? And that should, it's not going to solve.
You see, the
all.
Thing is, and the road planners are very clear on this. Until such time as there is a bypass or some solution, what they're doing at the moment is trying to give everyone the opportunity to get to where they're going.
Yeah. Yeah,
that you know what I mean. That's what the Polestar was about. It was never about eliminating traffic on the four lanes, but it meant if you joined the back of the queue at the Clanree, you knew eventually you're going to get to your destination. The people on the Remelton Road at the moment don't really feel they have that.
Yeah, it's a challenging one. Yeah,
and I think the hope being, and I'm not saying I'm in favour of it, because I simply don't know. The hope being that with more traffic lights out that road, you will know eventually that you'll get to where you're going. Yeah. That will encourage journeys. You know, you'll get your time through the junction.
And that's interesting you say that as well, Greg, because that's the way that they talk about traffic lights. Traffic lights will eventually get you to somewhere. I think I've seen that in Dublin as well. When you're sitting there, you think, oh, I'm 5 minutes sitting here. But then when they're green, you're gone and you're through it.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's one of the hopes. Look, it's going to be a long discussion, Greg, over the next, there's no doubt about it.
I think everyone will be helped by Garda patrols on the streets.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think any big town, and I don't care where it is, and I don't really think it matters about the level of immigration or otherwise, I think every big town now needs a Garda presence just to make people feel safe and secure.
Yeah, so, and again, on the back of a few weeks ago, three of us went to, myself, Enda and Leonard, we met the Gardaí 2 weeks ago, and on the back of that, one of our key discussions was about community policing. And in fairness to the Gardaí we met, their ask of us was, and we've written a letter to the new
commissioner
just outlining the challenges for Letterkenny and Donegal, and one of the things we've said is you need to bring back community policing. And by community policing, we mean there, in the old community policing in Letterkenny, you had four community Gardaí on the beat, and effectively that's what we've said is we need that brought back in. Currently you've won, and we asked, could we use those numbers, and they said absolutely. So, and Greg, there's no doubt when you have Gardaí on the beat, no matter where it is, it does deter certain things happening.
100%, but we've seen increases in policing in Derry when there were concerns. We've seen increasing in policing on the streets of Dublin when there were concerns. You know, why can't we sort of have that as well, you know? on to another 60 years, I suppose, as well. Is it keep on doing what you're doing? I mean, you know, a chamber will only be successful, or any organisation will only be successful, because of its people. The work that it does, of course, the people that help to do that work, and, of course, having a reputation for doing what it sets out it will do. Otherwise, it just falls, right? People cease to become members, but the membership's growing all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we've over 335 members. Claire Moore came on as our chamber, our business development manager, led by our CEO, Tony Forrester, who's been 17 years in the job. I think Greg, we've 17, 16 board members who all give up their time voluntary. I think the success of any board or any committee or any voluntary is that you have a good team there. I think that's what we have. We've had that for many years now. So what I would encourage people, if people want to get involved, Greg, you know, put up their hands, give us a shout. We'd love more committee members, board members. We have our subcommittees as well. But you have to keep, your question is, how do we keep going over the next 5-10 years? It's having that good structure, which we have now in place as well, good governance structure, and financially we're okay at the moment as well, which is a big plus. But can I give a shout out, do you mind, to the founding board members, Greg, if you don't mind?
Oh, pass her on.
Because I mean,
it's your interview.
I said because I think this was important. A lot of people recognise these names from 1965 and all deceased now. But if you look at the founding members, were Noel Crossan, Bernard Dillon, James Dillon, Paddy Farron, Donal McLaughlin, Joe Patterson, Dermot Rainey Senior, and Cyril West. So again, they were the founding blocks of where we're at today. And the beauty about, if people say, well, they're all men, if you look at our chamber now today, the diverse range of people on our chamber,
it's a different world.
It's absolutely a
different world. Like, yeah, I mean, I know what my mum and dad, my mum worked flat out, but at that time, you know, there was different roles and what have you. And now in modern life, it's more representative. I'm sure there was plenty of females, even though they weren't named there, were having a very strong influence on the direction.
Well, they were the bedrock behind. Yeah. And we just did something small the other night, Greg. You haven't done it yet.
Fascinating. Firstly, R. McCulloch, I haven't seen this before. The light in the box is pretty sexy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if it comes across those watch
on
there.
The camera, yeah.
It's a wee light. Look at it.
So if you close the box and open it, it opens.
Look at this now. Look, boom. Oops.
So we're going past that. So this new thing about engagement rings and all that, they're all kind of individualised now, and the boxes
I'm
light
saving
up.
The box. Save the box and stick a 50-euro ring in there.
But that's not for you.
Is that
mine? No, that's one of the past presidents who didn't.
What do you mean?
I brought that in just to show you. Where's it? No, but the lapel. I think the lapel, Greg, is just for listeners. I suppose it was to mark the past precedence.
I wasn't actually really going to take that, you know.
No, but so it's Letterkenny Chamber on the front, and at the back,
there. Show it up to the camera there.
At the back is the name of the president, and at the back is their name and the year they served as president. It's an individualized. Yeah. And you know what? Just to see some of the people there. I know you're. We'll get you one.
I don't want one. I was joking. It's if I'm going to grab it and hide it on you.
But the pride in some of those lads. They didn't notice this happened. It was just we'd agreed. So it was lovely just to mark.
It's a nice thing, and it's beautifully packaged. It's got significance, and it's an exclusive club. Like, there's not that many, you know.
Yeah.
If you think about it, in the wider scale of things,
I think one other thing, Greg, one just to say as well. I think I would have said it in my speech tonight. Like, the chamber is all about community too. And I think it's a really important thing, because sometimes we get wrapped up in the business world, which is what we're about, you know, from a lobbying perspective. But I suppose from a community perspective, you know, and I would like to thank all the community who support the chamber, you know, our events, Patrick's Day, Christmas lights, busking, you know, all that sort of stuff, and just the support.
It's an ecosystem, because it's those businesses also that are supporting fundraisers, donating to charity, giving employment opportunities. It's an ecosystem, and you know, with the buy-in from the community and the buy-in for the business, it doesn't work unless it works really, really well together. So, all right, well, that's 60 years, and a nice wee thing for you to be back in the hot seat. You were president, weren't you, during COVID,
yeah, that year.
So that was a bit
crap.
So it's good that you get another crack at the whip, because you've been on it for 11 years, and you're very passionate for a Cork man, for a Donegal man, very passionate about the town, the county as a whole, a great ambassador. Ambassador for it as well, Jimmy. So well done.
Thanks, Greg. And thanks for your support. And Highland here as well. I know I'm in here on the other side, and Mike, but, yeah, the support from Highland is huge.
But again, it's another one of those relationships. Good things work because it benefits everyone working together. Brilliant stuff. Yeah, Jimmy Stafford, thank you so very much indeed.